as finished as the one through Hana is. What do you mean, not as finished? Dylan bit her lip. What had gotten into him? He wasn't this man, a risk-taker. As far as she knew, this affair was the biggest and only major risk he'd ever taken. And while he didn't discuss it with her, she could see the toll their secret relationship was taking on him. The fights were getting worse with Jacqueline, probably because his wife sensed something wasn't right. And Dylan had noticed his fuse had been just a little bit shorter on this trip. It was subtle, like how he'd sighed when she'd forgotten her cell phone and had to run back up to the room, or when she was telling him a story about her roommates or some catastrophe at work. There was something distant about his expression, and he'd snap to attention only when she asked him if he was listening. The slight disconnect made Dylan try harder, to be less forgetful, to be a better storyteller. Her time with James was slipping through her fingers, and she didn't want to think about what would happen when they returned to reality. Obviously, things were going to change once James found out about the baby. The world she'd imagined for just the two of them would now include three. But Dylan couldn't be sure which way the axe would swing when she told him, or which way she wanted it to. Either direction would bring chaos, burst their bubble, and alter their lives forever. James had actually described himself as boring when he'd first met Dylan. He was something of a workaholic, working nights and weekends, whatever it took to get the deal closed. When he'd flown, it was always United Airlines, always the aisle seat, always direct. Unless a layover absolutely couldn't be avoided, like when he was flying to Amarillo, Texas. He followed routines. He was predictable. His words, not hers. Dylan had reasoned that their clandestine relationship had brought something to his life he'd been missing. She just worried now that it was the risks he was taking with her that were addictive, not Dylan herself.
There are a few miles that aren't completely paved, but really, it just means the road isn't as commercialized. It's what the locals would drive,
and I want that, the real experience.
We've come all the way here. Why not go for it?
James smiled at her. That smile that twisted her up inside, that made her giddy and scared and flustered all at once. Dylan considered his pitch. He had already taken her on some amazing excursions, one she would have never gone on otherwise. If it had been up to her, they would have lain at the pool all day, her reading fashion magazines and him massaging oil into her shoulders. She remembered Nick asking her to do a ropes course once. She'd scoffed and told him no, that she didn't want to navigate balance beams hundreds of feet off the ground suspended between trees. What if she fell? She'd said she had zero interest in being a trapeze artist.
I'll make sure you don't fall, he'd said slowly. I'll take care of you.
And she'd had no doubt that he would. It had begun to feel like Nick was obsessed with taking care of her, as if she weren't capable of it herself. But still, she didn't back down. The idea of being up that high scared her. But when James told her he'd planned all of these excursions, she heard herself saying, okay, even though she wasn't okay with any of it at all. But she wanted to be with him wherever that was, even if it meant driving on a road with no guardrails. The thought sent a shiver through her. It wasn't just them anymore. There was a baby to consider. She needed to tell him. She needed him to know. But something was stopping her. That bad feeling was back again, overpowering her, consuming her. She sucked in a deep breath.
And, James said, and Dylan looked over at him. The views of the Pacific, they're some of the best on the island.
Dylan frowned.
And right before we get to the backside, we'll see the Ohio Gulch, also known as the Seven Sacred Pools. I think we should stop there. They're supposed to be to die for.
I'm not sure anything about the drive to Hana would be worth dying for. Dylan pushed James in the shoulder.
Yeah, sorry. Probably not the best phrase to use. James shook his head. Dylan smiled. Why do they call them the Seven Sacred Pools? As the story goes, if you swim up all seven-tiered pools, you'll be welcome in heaven, James said, watching her face. Dylan thought about James's words, and the way she'd been feeling all day, as if a black cloud were following them. She wanted to tell him that they should just go back to the hotel and relax, spend time together the way she wanted to.
Look, if you don't want to take the back road, I get it. I don't want to push you. But there's just something about being here with you that makes me say, fuck it, let's live.
That familiar and dangerous feeling swelled inside of her. Hope. And she couldn't control herself. She reached out and grabbed it and held it tight as she listened to James.
This is considered one of the most spectacular drives in the world, and I think we should make the most of our last full day together.
He paused and locked his eyes on hers, reminding her that they had to go back to reality. She just wished she knew what that was going to look like.
We can hike in, it's not far at all, and swim in the pools, or just dip a toe in, whatever you want, and then have a picnic. I was thinking it would be a good place for us to talk, he said.
And Dylan felt a weight in the pit of her stomach. Was this why he was acting so strangely? Because he had something to tell her? Was he going to break up with her? Or could he be leaving his wife?
What? You don't agree?
Dylan hadn't realized she'd been moving her head back and forth. She looked into James's eyes, so full of life. The life she'd breathed into him. She decided to push the bad feeling away and trust him. To see where this road would take them. Hoping that at the end of it there would be a future. For all three of them. And she decided right then that she was going to confess that to him, no matter what his response was, good or bad.
Let's do it, Dylan said, and kissed him. I'm ready.
Chapter 28, Jax, After. When I was 16 and Beth was 17, she'd kicked a boy's ass for me. Okay, so she didn't exactly kick his ass, but a slap was involved, and it left a mark. I just found out that Alex Henderson had asked another girl to homecoming, which was a problem because Alex was my boyfriend and he'd already asked me. He what? Beth adjusted her backpack on her shoulder and fiddled with the knot on her denim shirt. I leaned my head against my locker and told Beth I'd heard from my friend Janet, who'd heard from her lab partner Carrie, that he'd asked Heidi O'Reilly to the dance.
But he's your fucking boyfriend.
Apparently he's not anymore, I said, a tear rolling down my cheek that I quickly wiped away with the sleeve of my sweatshirt. He told Heidi we were broken up.
What the hell is wrong with him? What a jerk. I never liked him.
My eyes pooled with tears, but I held them back. You don't like anyone I date.
Beth gave me her, well, can you blame me look? I'm going to find him.
No, don't, I pleaded. The last thing I needed was a scene. I already felt stupid enough that he'd dumped me and hadn't even bothered to let me know.
Too late, she said, heading toward the quad where he and the other basketball players would sit during lunchtime.
I trailed behind her, trying to convince her to stop, but she marched forward, her backpack bobbing up and down behind her.
There he is. Alex! She yelled as she approached him.
Alex whipped his head around at the sound of his name, shrugging at the two guys he was talking to as Beth approached. I couldn't see her face, but I knew the expression that was fixed upon it. It was her scowl. And that combination of knotted eyebrows and pursed lips could scare the shit out of anyone. She dropped her backpack and barreled toward him, calling him an asshole. I stopped short as a small crowd gathered, wishing I could disappear into the grass when she asked him how he could do this to me. Then Alex's eyes found mine, and for a moment I thought he was going to come to me, explained it had all been a misunderstanding. But he smirked and looked away.
I was done with her.
He laughed and high-fived his buddies. And that's when Beth slapped him across the face. He winced, drawing his hand to his cheek. His entire face turned bright red.
What the hell? He yelled. You're crazy!
He wasn't laughing anymore. Beth strode back to where I was standing.
Come on, we're going to Carl's Jr. for fried zucchini and a huge Dr. Pepper.
My treat, she said. And I couldn't help but smile at the thought of my favorite meal. That my sister was so badass. That someone cared about me that much. I think I've taken for granted how often she's done that for me over the years, protecting me, even when I didn't think I needed it. I know that's why she's come to Maui.
Are you okay that she's here?
Nick asks as we see a sign for Hanaa Airport.
That she just showed up?
Of course, I say. Why?
Well, she got on a flight and came 6 hours without even asking you. What if you hadn't wanted her to come?
I would always want my sister with me. I frowned at him, deciding not to admit that I had, in fact, told her not to come, wondering if he's the one who's put off by her arrival.
Are you not okay that she's here? I'm fine with it. I mean, the timing is just a little crazy. After everything that just happened.
He looks at me, and I know what he's not saying. The kiss.
And we're still wet.
He pulls at his t-shirt, which is clinging to his chest.
But if you're all right, so am I.
We'll dry. We'll be fine, I say, even though I feel certain about only the first statement. And anyway, if there's one thing you need to know about Beth, it's that she does what she wants, when she wants. That's just who she is. And you know what? Most of the time she knows what I need more than I do.
She sounds like a good sister.
She is.
Well, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about her, Nick says.
And I realized he was just looking out for me when he was asking about Beth. We'd been living in our little bubble for days, without seeing anyone from our real lives, so I'm sure it was a shock for him that she's here. As we weave our way down the wet Hana Highway, both of us looking away as we pass the stone bench where we'd kissed earlier, I share my favorite Beth stories. He laughs when I tell him about her twitchy eye tell, and he nods in approval when I mention the slap heard round the world, as we'd come to call it. We fall into a comfortable silence as he slowly drives the narrow road. A car whips around a corner and blares its horn at us, and I think of James and Dylan's accident, the last seconds before their worlds went dark. Had James been trying to avoid an oncoming car and swerved too hard, losing control? I don't know the exact location of where they crashed. Nick does, but I asked him not to share it with me. Not until I'm ready. And after my panic this morning, I'm not sure I'll ever be ready. I know from Officer Kealoha that they had been driving on the backside of the road to Hana, considered much more dangerous than the front part. In places, it's as high as 1,000 feet above sea level. It's deemed so perilous that rental car companies advise against driving it. It struck me as so odd when I heard that. James had never been a risk-taker, so I was shocked he'd chosen to venture into such uncharted territory. But then again, I was surprised to hear he'd had an affair. I'd wondered if Dylan had brought out a different side of him that had lain dormant while he lived his predictable life with me. Or maybe Nick was right. Maybe I hadn't known my husband at all. As we turn down the long road toward Hana Airport a few minutes later, I'm not sure what the plan is after we pick up Beth. The subject of returning to the hotel hasn't come up again. We're dancing around it like a bear we don't want to poke. I glance at Nick's profile and wonder if he still wants to leave the road to Hana before we make it to the backside. Because now that my sister is here, Now that we're pulling into the parking lot and I can see her standing in front of the tiny terminal that looks like a house, wearing a white blouse and tan capris, her hair pulled back into a messy knot. I realize I'm not ready to go home. Just the sight of her is giving me strength, and I feel a pull toward James. I want to know where he took his last breath, to say goodbye. Maybe it's Beth I've needed by my side all along, to hold my hand, to make sure I don't get too close to the edge, to be there for me after I let James go once and for all, to protect me. I hope Nick will decide to stay longer, to say his own goodbyes, to get the closure I know he needs as well. Beth waves at me excitedly, and I unlock my seatbelt and slide toward the door, the car not yet stopped. I can feel happy tears in the back of my eyes. I grip the door handle and turn toward Nick, who's laughing at me. What? We're basically twins. We're very, very close. Nick stops the Jeep and I jump out, running to avoid the light rain, and hurl myself into my sister's arms. That was quite a scene back there, Beth says a few minutes later, as we sit at the bar of the Hana Ranch restaurant a few miles from the airport. The three other people who were on my flight were staring at us like we were reuniting after years. It's been, what, 5 days? She laughs. I know. I bawled. But I think I needed to, I say, and look over at Nick, who's sipping from a mug of coffee. He seems unusually quiet. But then again, when Beth and I are together, it's hard to get a word in. Thanks for loaning me one of your shirts, by the way, I say, pulling at the cotton fabric. I was soaked to the bone, I add. Beth smiles. That's Hawaii weather for you. I glance at Nick, who's wearing a t-shirt with a guy flashing a Shaka sign that he got from a shop across the street from the restaurant. So how are you doing? Beth looks across me toward Nick. He takes a breath before responding. Well, I'm finally dry, so there's that. He smiles and takes a sip of his coffee. Beth doesn't respond, waiting for his real answer. It's been hard. Harder than I thought it would be. Nick's being modest. He's been the strong one. My rock. I've been the hot mess. Did Jax tell you I didn't want her to come here to Maui? Beth asks, apparently ready to jump right in. Nick looks at me again. She didn't, he says slowly. But I get it. Getting on a plane to Hawaii with a complete stranger after her husband had just died seemed crazy, I'm sure. To put it mildly, Beth offers a tight smile. Is that why you're here? To make sure I'm not a serial killer? Nick laughs. Maybe. She smirks and takes a sip of her beer, eyeing him. I don't blame you. You've got to look out for your sister. But for what it's worth, I'm not. Did I mention Nick's a firefighter? If anything, he's been making sure I don't get hurt. Except for your little escapade in the ocean. I think maybe you fell asleep on the job that night, Nick, Beth says, not unkindly. Beth's words never spill menace. It may not be what you want to hear, but she always speaks the truth. But she's off the mark this time. A very small part of me had wanted to keep going into that ocean, to let the water envelop all my pain. And he had pulled me back to reality, literally and figuratively. Hey, I interject before Nick can answer. That's not fair. He saved me. No, she's right, Nick says evenly. I should have done a better job of keeping you safe. Stopped you when you were running down the beach. Before you went into the ocean. Especially after what you just discovered. You're not my bodyguard, and you are going through the exact same thing I am. You just heard the same terrible news, I say, and look pointedly at Beth. He's not here on vacation, you know. He lost someone important to him, too. I'm surprised by my forcefulness, by how protective I feel toward Nick. But this thing we're doing out here, it's ours. And no one from the outside could possibly understand it. Beth's face relaxed slightly. I don't mean to be insensitive, and I'm truly sorry for your loss. I can't imagine. It's just that... You want to protect your sister. Nick finishes her sentence. Always, she says.
I get it. I do, Nick says, and I can tell he's sincere. But for the record, I want to protect her too.
I notice his shoulders stiffen. Beth nods, but I'm not sure she believes him. It just seems like this trip has created more problems than it's solved.
Maybe, Nick says, but doesn't elaborate.
I feel like every time Jax calls me, she's in tears about some new piece of horrible information you guys have found out. Information that serves no purpose but to hurt her.
I never said it was going to be easy, Nick says,
a slight edge to his voice.
I jump in.
Beth, this decision was mine and only mine. And it's been hard, but I was prepared for that. I can read Beth's mind. But if Nick had never showed up on my doorstep, I wouldn't be here dealing with all of this hard stuff. She blames him. I just don't want you to get hurt anymore, she says to me, giving Nick a look.
And neither do I, he says.
I look at Nick. Is that why you want to turn back? To protect me? What do you mean? Beth asks before he can answer.
Well, Nick, we weren't sure we should keep driving the road to Hana.
Really? What happened? I had a freak out while we were driving. After that storm came out of nowhere, I think about his lips on mine, his hot breath, his hands in my hair. Obviously, I can't tell her this part. Not right now, anyway.
What?
Beth gives me a look. Nick suggested we go home. He hadn't actually said those words, but I want to find out if that's what he meant.
It sounds like Nick and I finally agree on something, Beth says, and looks at him for a reaction.
I just didn't want to push Jax any more than I already had, he says, and I feel my heart sink. I guess he's ready to give up on the whole thing.
I'm worried about her.
He runs his finger around the rim of his mug.
When I convinced her to come here, it sounded like such a good idea. Like we could finally get the closure we're both desperate for. But now, he says, locking eyes with me for a split second. Now I think it will send us tumbling backward to see where they...
I understand. Beth holds her hand up before he can finish.
So then it's settled? We're all going back home?
Beth looks at us. And suddenly I realize this is exactly why she came here. Not just to protect me, but to talk me into leaving. And now she thinks Nick has done her job for her. I can tell she doesn't like Nick. She probably made up her mind about him the day I first told her he'd come to my house. And once Beth has something in her head, it's hard to change it. Her dislike is subtle. But I could tell by the way she chews on her lower lip when he talks, not really listening but observing. By how she's holding her shoulders as if on guard. By the way she's held her gaze firmly on him. She's definitely not a fan.
Nick nods. Yes, I think it's the right thing to do.
I suck in a deep breath just as Beth lets out a sigh of relief. Her shoulders relax. At least they can agree on this, she's thinking. Maybe he's not so bad, she concedes. It blows my mind that Nick would give up now. I know he told me back in California that he'd decide once we were here, that he'd let his heart guide him, that he'd let Dylan show the way. But we're so close to seeing everything. to discovering the secrets this highway holds about the people we loved. He pushed me to come here, pushed me to face both James's demons and my own. It has to be the kiss. It's changed everything. Okay, then, Beth says, standing up. Mine could be the shortest trip anyone has ever taken to Maui. Her eyes light up as she watches me. She thinks she's getting exactly what she wants. She believes I'm going home. No, wait, I say. I want to stay. I'll call Officer Kealoha and tell him I'm ready to see where it happened. I emailed him when I arrived, so he already knows I'm here and that this is a possibility. He offered to escort me if I decided to go through with it. Even if I had decided not to go to the crash site, I'd planned to say thank you in person for all he'd done for me. The police station is just down that way. I point toward the road we'd driven to the restaurant. I've come this far, and I can't turn back now. And I hope you both will go with me. I wait, hoping Nick will change his mind, hoping Beth will support me. But even if they both say no, I'm going. I can do this. I can stand on the edge of the cliff where my husband died, and I can say goodbye. I owe that much to him and to myself. Oh, Jax, you don't have to put yourself through that. Nick is right. It could set you both back, Beth says gently. Look, Beth, I love you. I don't expect you to understand this. But, Nick, I have to say I'm really surprised. It was your idea to come all the way here. Nick looks down. Can I talk to you for a minute? In private? It's a question, but Beth's not really asking. I nod and she grabs my hand, then looks at Nick. Sorry, I just need to have a sister-to-sister chat for a second. And he nods, but locks eyes with me, giving me an apologetic smile. I don't like him, she says, as soon as we get out front. I know, Beth, but you never like anyone. It took you almost a year to warm up to James. True, she says. You don't know him, Beth. Neither do you. Yes, I do, I say, looking toward the restaurant. We've talked a lot on this trip. He shared things with me and I with him. Just give him a chance. Fine, I'll give him a chance, but I'll do it back in California. I'll invite him over for dinner. I'll make risotto. Sound good? She folds her arms across her chest. I roll my eyes at her. I'm not leaving. Not yet. I need to say goodbye to James. Beth is quiet for several seconds. Okay. If this is really what you need to do, I'll go with you. But I think you should let Nick off the hook. If he doesn't want to go, then he doesn't want to go. You just don't want him to go. Maybe, she smirks. I hug her. Thank you. We walk back inside. I'm going to stay, I say, and look at him, wondering if he is too. He simply shakes his head. What about Dylan? I'm sorry, Nick says softly. I can't. Well, I'm sorry too. But now isn't the time to be weak, I say, as I walk back out the door. Beth following like always, watching my back. Chapter 29, Dylan, Before. There is no way I'm jumping off here. Dylan inched toward the side of the bridge, feeling woozy just staring at the freshwater pool at least 50 feet below. If you guys aren't going to jump, do you mind? A young man, maybe 18, with deep brown skin and a shark-tooth necklace, motioned toward the edge, giving them a look that said, "What are you doing up here anyway? Aren't you too old to be jumping off this bridge?" "Yes, we are." Or at least he is, Dylan thought, looking at James, taking in the occasional silver thread that wove its way through his light brown hair.
You live here?
James asked the boy. Born and raised.
How deep is it?
That one, it's maybe 20 feet, but you have to hit it just right because it's shallower on the sides. You're really thinking about doing it?
He widened his big brown eyes at James.
We get a lot of people who chicken out once they stand up on the edge.
Not me. I'm doing it. I want to jump and then swim in the seven pools, like they say you should.
Hey, brah, this they you're talking about is some dude who made it up to help with tourism. There are way more than seven pools, and I'm not sure how much closer to heaven you'll be if you get your skin wet in all of them.
James looked over the edge. Doesn't matter to me. The jump is what I really want anyway. That feeling, that rush.
It's like nothing else. But you better be quick. The park rangers will get pissed if they see you. You guys aren't even supposed to have parked your jeep over there.
The boy looked up the road to a curve where they'd stopped.
That's yours, right?
Dylan and James nodded.
After you, James said.
And he and Dylan silently stepped aside and watched as the boy got up on the edge and jumped, grabbing his knees to his chest and letting out a high-pitched scream all the way down. He plunged under the water, and when he came up, a group of his friends whistled and clapped, and Dylan released the breath she'd been holding. She didn't even know the boy, and she'd been worried about him.
I'm going for it, James said, taking his shirt off. Will you hold this? Just take the jeep after I jump and enter the park, which should be another quarter mile or so down the road. I'll meet you down at the water.
James, Dylan thought of what the boy had said. That he had to hit it just right. What if he wasn't as lucky as the boy they'd just watched? She looked over the bridge again. Five of the pools separated by small waterfalls stretched out before her. In the distance, she could see people on the rocks surrounding the pools or swimming in them, but they'd probably arrived there the right way, through the park, not by jumping off this bridge.
James tossed the black t-shirt he'd purchased yesterday, with Maui Locos printed on the front in big white block letters, onto the ground when Dylan wouldn't take it.
What? He said, as he stood up on the bridge and put his arms out to the sides, like Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic. 2 days ago, she'd been swimming with a 200-pound sea turtle named Bob Marley in open water. And now that her pregnancy suspicions had been confirmed, she was frightened to put one foot in front of the other. When James had first brought up jumping off the bridge after he'd convinced her to consider driving the backside of the mountain, she hadn't said anything to him. But just the thought of him doing it scared the shit out of her. He kept piling on the risks, and she wondered why. She tried to push away the idea of him getting hurt, or worse, but it kept chirping away at her insides. And now it was pounding inside her head.
Don't do it.
She grabbed James's hand and pulled him back down to the ground.
Let's go have that picnic you talked about. A little salami, a little cheese. I'll even take a sip of that wine.
She nuzzled against his bare chest, surprised by how fast his heart was beating. James pulled back.
You know I can't wait to feed you banana bread and drink that Pinot Noir. But first I'll jump. It's perfectly safe. If he can do it, so can I.
He pointed to the boy sitting with his friends on the rocks below. They were all yelling for James to jump. Dylan was reminded of when she was a teenager, begging to do the same things her friends were. Their parents let them stay out past midnight. Their parents give them money for the movies. Their parents don't rag on them. Her mom would fixate her deep blue eyes on Dylan and say what she always did. If so-and-so jumped off a bridge, would you do it too? Apparently, James would. Dylan felt her arms prick with goosebumps, even though it was at least 80 degrees.
I just don't want anything to happen to you.
You're being ridiculous! Nothing is going to happen to me, I promise!
He punched his arms in the air.
I'm invincible, baby!
Dylan studied his eyes, wide and dancing with impulse. She wondered what was going on inside his head. He rarely opened up about anything serious. She knew he had a brother who died young, but that was only because he'd slipped and said something while he was drinking.
When she'd asked more about it, he wouldn't get into the details. Did he want to try to defy death because his brother couldn't?
Are you okay? Is this about your...
James shot her a look, and she thought better of finishing her sentence. Come on, Dill. This isn't really going to be a problem for you, is it? Because I can't have, you know, another person nagging me, being all wife-like.
Wife-like?
Dylan pressed her hands firmly into her sides. You cannot be serious. James looked like himself, his bare torso showing the hard work he put in at the gym, his stubble-lined jaw showing the hours that had passed since he shaved this morning. But he still didn't seem like himself at all. Once he told her that he wasn't a very good husband, that he could be a real ass. At the time, she'd giggled. There was no way James could ever be an ass. Now she saw glimpses that his words had probably been a confession, not a joke.
I'm as serious as a heart attack, James said, refusing to break eye contact with her.
She flashed back to the Huelo lookout point, where they'd stopped a couple of hours ago. It was a romantic spot, and they'd walked down steep concrete steps to gaze at the ocean through a sea of lush palms. James had grabbed Dylan by the waist, pointing at a string of hand-painted coconut bras that were hanging on a line. Dylan hadn't wanted James to buy her one, but he had insisted. Finally, she relented, knowing full well she would never wear it. But it was so hard to say no to James. Even in an affair, there's a honeymoon period, Dylan thought, and then it expires, just like in a regular relationship. Just like it had with Nick. She knew she was being tested in this moment. If she kept pressing him not to jump, she could tell they would probably end up in a fight. She'd look forward to having all this uninterrupted time with him, to know what it felt like to share both the sunrise and sunset on the same day, to not feel like their precious moments were slipping away like sand through her fingertips, to believe that the life they had together was real. And she had done those things and enjoyed them. But she'd also seen behind the sheen of his eyes, where the other side of his personality lived. Dylan understood, of course, that James wasn't perfect. But now that she knew about the baby, she was questioning everything.
Dylan, come on, she heard him saying. Where's my Bayessa?
I'm right here, she said, and stood stiffly. He scoffed, and even after he closed his mouth, she could see his jaw tighten, his teeth grinding.
No, she's not. I'm looking for the woman who doesn't take my shit, but who also doesn't give me any either.
This was giving him shit, caring if he lived or died?
I need to do this still.
First, he'd wanted to drive the unpaved back roads without guardrails, and now he needed to jump 50 feet into a pool of water that was maybe 20 feet deep. What was next? Skydiving without a parachute? Two young couples, probably in their 20s, were walking toward them, and she didn't want them to overhear her trying to convince him this was a bad idea. It was already too embarrassing to admit that her feelings weren't going to weigh into his decision, that he simply didn't care what she thought. She knew he was jumping whether she wanted him to or not.
Fine. But if you end up paralyzed, I'm not going to wipe your ass and spoon-feed you applesauce. That will be your wifey's job.
Harsh, James said,
and hurled his body over the edge before she could respond. She watched him fall into the water below, his body a rigid straight line. He plunged below the surface, feet first, and finally reappeared, letting out a whoa and pumping his fist above the water. The two couples behind her oohed and awed over James's jump, thankfully not noticing the tension of Dylan's face long after he'd sailed over the edge. They might have been impressed, but Dylan wasn't. James had been right. Nothing had happened to him. But in the last 2 minutes, something had happened to her.
She'd seen a side of James she hadn't known was there or hadn't wanted to believe existed. She couldn't be sure. She was forced to accept the truth. Their little bubble could be penetrated by reality after all. She liked existing in it not just because it shielded them from the rest of the world, but because it hid their flaws. If they spent all their time drinking and dancing at bars or rolling around between the sheets, they didn't have to deal with tense situations like these, where their true personalities would shine through. But on this vacation, where they were spending so much time together, the flaws were coming out without permission. And now, Dylan realized one very important thing about James that was not going to change. He was going to do what he wanted, when he wanted, whether she agreed with him or not. She pressed her hand to her stomach and sighed. What did that mean for their future? Chapter 30. Jax. After.
What was that all about?
Beth and I are standing next to the Jeep, and I glance back toward the restaurant, wondering if Nick is going to follow us out, wanting him to appear almost as much as not. You storming out like that? Nothing, I say. A huge lie, obviously.
It definitely wasn't nothing, Beth says slowly, pursing her lips to accentuate her point. It just seemed like a real fight, you know? Like one between...
Between whom? I dare her with my eyes. Say it. Accuse me.
I don't know. Never mind, she says, wringing her hands.
I release a long, steady stream of air through my lips. Thank God. I'm not ready to discuss Nick or our relationship or whatever it is. I'm not even sure I could put it into words if I tried. All I know is I'm pissed at him for not wanting to finish what he started in Maui. Or maybe I'm pissed at him for not wanting to finish what he started with me.
So now what? Beth asks.
I wait a beat, watching my sister. Imagining if it had been her husband who'd been in Maui with his mistress when he was supposed to be on a business trip in Kansas. She would collapse into herself. Thinking first about their three kids, how would they move forward? Then eventually about herself. But in between, she'd be like a lab rat in a maze, desperately trying to find her way out, but only hitting dead end after dead end. Because Mark is her center, her gravitational pull, his yin to her yang. Sure, she's buttoned up, and I guarantee she printed an Excel spreadsheet of her kids' activities and prepped a slow cooker pork roast before she left for her flight here this morning. But that's part of her routine. But this would paralyze her. I'm not saying the same hasn't happened to me, that I'm not half of who I was. But it's different. James and I were a mess more than we weren't. Always one terse word away from someone sleeping on that damn red chenille couch. Even though I had no idea he was cheating on me, that he was lying to me, it wasn't an unusual occurrence for us to be shocking each other, pushing the edges of our relationship, testing our endurance. But I'd naively thought we kept the betrayals inside the walls of our own house, that our messy relationship was the canvas of our life together. I'm calling Officer Kealoha, I say, and press his name in my phone. And he answers, just like he always has. Thank God this man hasn't stopped taking my calls, hasn't given up on me. Beth watches as I tell him I'm at the Hana Ranch restaurant with my sister, and that I'm ready to see where the accident happened. He tells me to stay put, that he'll come right over. And I think about this man whom I've never met in person, but who has listened to me cry, babble, question, you name it, without so much as a complaint. And I wonder how he's able to be so unflappable, how he can do his job without getting emotionally attached. I think of Nick again, and the pressure he's constantly under as a firefighter, the pain and anguish he sees. And I wonder if it simply takes a certain type of man, who is calm, who knows his limits, Nick must really know himself, how much he can take, and that what he will see and feel if he goes to the accident scene, he won't be able to detach from. "He's coming," I say to Beth after I end the call. "And then what?" she asks, wringing her hands, the planner in her needing to know what comes next. "And then we go," I say, looking down at my feet, noticing the polish on my big toe is chipped. "What do you think Nick's going to do?" She glances at the restaurant. "I have no idea," I say, following her gaze to the front patio, where we can see a couple with matching vests and white hair perusing a guidebook and sipping fruity drinks. I feel my eyes well with tears thinking of what Nick said about wanting to grow plastic hip old with Dylan. And it really hits me that I'll never know James with gray hair, that he'll never see the lines that will eventually crease my face. Am I crazy? Beth puts her arm around me, and I lean into her. "No, not at all. You're brave." "Me? Brave?" I scoff. She might as well be telling me I'm a supermodel. "Yeah, you." She gives me a long look. "You're stronger than you think, you know. I could never have made it through something like this." "I haven't yet." "But you will." She grabs my shoulders and looks me directly in the eye. "You will." I want to believe that. "You know, Jax, I loved James, I did. There were things about him that made him a great husband, especially for the first few years. But there was something about him that you didn't like." "I know, I know, I know." I drag the last one out for dramatic effect. "I suppose I deserve that," Beth says. "But that's not it. I did like him, because you loved him and he was your husband. What I was going to say was that something about him sucked something out of you. Over time with him, your confidence slowly seeped out of you. Do you see that?" "I do," I say, tears starting to fall. "Oh, honey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you cry. I shouldn't criticize him, not now." "It's okay. It's not you," I say, thinking about how everything changed after I told him about the 20% chance. "Then what is it?" And that's when I tell her everything. Chapter 31. Jax, After. Beth hugs me for several minutes and doesn't say anything. She strokes my hair and I squeeze her, letting my tears fall thanks to the silent permission only a sister can give. It's hard to put into words how it feels to have finally told Beth the truth about why James and I had unraveled, why he'd changed, maybe even why he'd had the affair. It feels like I'm me again. For so long, I've been so ashamed and embarrassed, and there was a part of me that had always been scared to admit to her that I hadn't told my own husband the truth. "You and Mark tell each other everything," I say to her. "And maybe this is stupid, but because you have kids, I worried you might side with him." I shake my head slightly. "Oh, Jax," Beth says. "I might be a mom, but you're still my sister. I'm sorry you didn't feel like you could come to me." "I should have." "You did the best you knew how to do at the time and hoped it would work out. That's all any of us can do, you know?" "Clearly this did not work out the way I had hoped," I say, and give her a sad smile. "I'm sorry," Beth says, and hugs me again. "Will you make a deal with me?" I ask. Beth nods. "Let's not be sorry for me anymore, okay?" "Okay," Beth says simply. And I'm more grateful for her in this moment than I can ever tell her. Nick still hasn't come outside when Officer Kealoha pulls up next to us a few minutes later. I've made my choice, and Nick has clearly made his. I only wonder which of us has made the right one. When Officer Kealoha steps out of his white SUV, he pushes his sunglasses on top of his head and smiles. I feel a pull toward him. My anchor to this place. My lifeline all these weeks. Because of that bond, I walk over and hug him like an old friend. He seems momentarily surprised, but he pats my back quickly, then releases himself from my arms.
"It's nice to meet you in person," he says.
"You too," I smile. "Officer Kealoha, this is Beth," I say as they shake hands and exchange greetings. I recall my first words to him about her, that she's like a part of me, my other arm. And I know he understands why she's here with me now, because she can't not be.
"You sure about this?"
he asks as he looks from me to Beth, locking eyes with my sister. "She is. She's ready," Beth answers for me. He nods, but the look in his eyes, the way his jaw is set, gives nothing away as to what he might be thinking about my choice. He's just going to guide me to James. Beth grips my hand, and I squeeze back without looking at her. We're silent, but I know from the feel of her touch that she finally understands why I'm going. That, despite what James did, he was still my husband, and I still loved him. Officer Kealoha opens the passenger door for me and the back door for Beth, then starts the car.
"So, we've never talked specifically about the stretch of road where the accident happened. Do you have any questions?"
he begins as he pulls the car onto Highway 360, and soon we're surrounded by the lush greenery of the rainforest. Save for the regular signs warning of one-lane roads, or reminding a driver to yield to oncoming traffic, it would be possible to forget this is a highway full of just as much danger as hope. I want to tell Officer Kealoha that even after he takes me to where James had his last moments, I will still have so many questions. Questions that may never be answered, that I will have to live with for the rest of my life. Questions that I can only pray will eventually settle in the back of my mind next to my memories. But today, what did I want to know? What could he tell me that would really answer the one question that was eating away at me day after day? Why did my husband have to die? I just wish I knew why James would drive on the backside if it's so dangerous, I say to Officer Kealoha. I can only imagine the level of tragedy he's seen on these roads. I wonder where my husband's crash ranks.
The backside of the road to Hana is intriguing to certain travelers because it's not considered touristy,
Officer Kealoha says, then stops so a compact car can pass from the other direction. I just never knew James as risk-taker. Officer Kealoha doesn't respond, and we're all silent for several minutes, none of us knowing what to say. Finally, he speaks.
Once we see the seven sacred pools, it's about another 4 miles or so until we will be officially driving on the unauthorized section of the road. The accident didn't happen far from there.
Beth squeezes my shoulder from the back seat, and I reach over and put my hand on top of hers. We ride in silence as Officer Kealoha maneuvers the SUV through the roads, bending and winding sharply. I think of a pregnant Dylan, how nauseated she must have been. About 30 minutes later, Officer Kealoha points to his right.
That's why Lua Falls there.
We see a group of people standing on the side of the road taking pictures. My insides are clenching, because I know we're getting close. Soon after, we cross over a bridge and Officer Kealoha points down to where the pools are. I can't help but wonder where James and Dylan might have stopped along the way. Did they eat barbecue at that place right before the main turn into Hana? Did they stop at one of the many unmanned fruit stands along the road and grab a fresh papaya to share, leaving a dollar in the jar? Had Dylan made James slow down so she could take a picture of the waterfall we passed a few miles back, not knowing her time was short?
Okay. We're coming up on the unauthorized road,
It's going to be pretty bumpy, Officer Kealoha says quietly. The SUV slowly ascends a steep hill, and I let out a scream as a large truck comes barreling around the corner. Officer Kealoha curses under his breath. Damn locals. We drive in silence for a minute. Then Officer Kealoha begins again. We think the accident happened just up here. What do you mean you think you know where the accident happened? You aren't sure? Beth asks. This part of the road is unpaved, so there aren't skid marks or other indications that James tried to stop the Jeep. It's impossible for us to know exactly where the brakes were applied. And you're sure they were applied? I ask, and I hear Beth gasp quietly. I haven't told her that I've been wondering if something happened before the Jeep careened off the cliff. Something that caused them to crash. Something other than the road being narrow and dangerous. Like an argument. And James, he had that temper. Especially toward the end. I've been thinking a lot about a fight we had once. In the car of all places. It was New Year's Day. The day after I told him about the 20%. There'd been a party at his boss's house to watch the Rose Bowl, and despite the fact that we'd been up half the night arguing, he'd said we both needed to be there. He'd been angling for a promotion and thought it would look bad if we didn't show up. And I'd drunk too much, like I often did when I was trying to forget something. And I'd said something stupid to his boss's wife. I can't remember what it was. But it had embarrassed him. He told me that much as we were leaving, as he stormed off to the car with me several feet behind him. On the drive home, he pounded his fist into the steering wheel and accidentally hit the horn. I laughed at him because I was buzzed, and he said, "You think this is funny? After everything you've done, what about this?" And he jerked the wheel, making our car swerve into the next lane. That obviously got my attention, and I sat up and looked at him, scared out of my mind. And he said nothing else. And neither did I. There were no words to describe what we'd become. I can't help but wonder if something happened between him and Dylan. If they'd argued, maybe about the pregnancy. And his temper had gotten the best of him. Of them. Maybe he'd accidentally caused the crash because he'd done something stupid like swerve the car on purpose. I ask Officer Kealoha about this now, not mentioning our fight.
Mrs. Morales, there's no reason to suspect this was anything other than a tragic accident. What happened between them in the Jeep before it crashed, we will never know. Could they have been fighting when it happened? Sure, but still. To be so careless while driving up here, when there are cliffs this steep. I'm just not sure why anyone would be reckless like that, no matter how angry they might be. I know this might be hard to hear, but like I've mentioned before, eyewitnesses who saw them picnicking said they looked happy. They purchased wine at that store, but were certain James was driving, and there wasn't a way to test his...
He clears his throat.
Sadly, accidents on this part of the road are much more common than we'd like. There's a reason most car rental companies won't rent to people planning to drive this side. It's dangerous, especially as it gets later in the afternoon. The sun becomes blinding.
Beth interjects. I agree with the officer, Jax. I just don't think James would do anything to jeopardize another person's life. I'm sure you're right, is all I say. Because that's what I want to believe. Even though I know James was capable of letting his anger outweigh his common sense.
How are you able to pinpoint the time of day it happened? Beth asks the officer.
According to a police report that was filed by Dylan, her purse was stolen out of their Jeep while she and James were at the Seven Sacred Pools. She called in the theft at about 4:30 and mentioned she'd been searching for it for an hour.
You never told me this before now, I ask. Why?
Well, it wasn't relevant, in my opinion. It was her purse, her police report. I didn't consider it information you'd need or want.
I guess it's not. I sigh. It wasn't relevant to me, per se, but it was another piece of information that would always stick in my mind.